Have you ever wanted to start your own business but don't know how to? Are you struggling to reach your market but don't have the right tools? Are you trying to increase your business connections but don't know the right people? Welcome to Your Business Monster Podcast.
Hi, and welcome to episode 8 of the Your Business Monster Podcast. In this week's edition, we're discussing what it takes to take your passion and turn it into a career. I'm Dave Butcher.
And I'm Mike Taylor, and we are Your Business Monsters. This week, we have our second interview of the podcast series, and it's a good friend, Mr. Sean Hughes, to the show. Hello, Sean.
Hi, all right, lads.
Sean's been DJing with the Clean brand for a number of years, and also recently has DJed in the likes of, I can't say this, pronounce it.
Ushuaia.
Ushuaia, yeah.
So thanks a lot for doing this with us, Sean.
Thanks for having us.
Good stuff. We wanted to ask you, basically, how it all started, how did it all start? Where did it all come from?
My brother, when I was 9 years old, that would be 1989, my brother came home with a tape and put it on, and it was by a DJ called Carl Cox. And he explained to me, listen to this, this is two records going around at the same time. And I was like, oh, what? What do you mean? I was into Iron Maiden at the time. I was into heavy metal. And he explained it. And I was just absolutely fascinated. And it was this music that I'd never heard before, this house music. And absolutely fascinated with it. And I copied the tape and listened to it. And I listened to all the mixes. And I was trying to work out when he was bringing it in. And when the first song was coming in and the next one was going out. And everything was in perfect beat sync. And the energy in the music and that, I was like, this is for me, this. I'm done. So I nicked my sister's record player and my brother's record player, put them together with like four sets of speakers because I didn't have a mixer or anything. I taught myself to mix there and then in my bedroom didn't have any house music, so I was just looking for records with 4/4 beats in. Like, I was mixing the Beatles, like, don't tell me that, wrecked his records. Mixing the Beatles into the likes of whatever I could find, like the Smiths or anything.
Yeah.
Just taught myself how to get records and beat sync and then got a paper round. So at the age I could. And started buying records, and the rest is history.
From 3Beat and
Groover, down Matthew Street, I'd be there religiously every week. I used to earn £12.50 a week, and it was £2.50 for me save away on the train, and I was able to get two records, each for a fiver, and I used to specifically ask to put away two records for a fiver for me every week, so I got two instead of one.
Yeah.
And I think the lads that worked in there, they kind of liked it, you know, as this young lad coming in, like, and
Can you remember he was selling you your records?
Rusty. Brilliant DJ from Liverpool, Rusty.
I think that's the difference in the industry now, isn't it? You get, it's that kind of dedication, you've gone out, you've got a little job for yourself.
Yeah.
You've wanted to do something, rather than it just be so available to you that it's just like almost a whim.
You can go on the internet, get whatever you want now,
I think that's the difference in the industry now, definitely.
But 5 years of a paper round and trying to build a record collection, and now you can just jump online and get what you want.
Indeed.
Good times, really.
Yeah.
Don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Do you find that, some of the stuff that's coming out now, it doesn't interest me at all. Mm. When someone puts on a track from, like, the 90s or, like, early 2000s, like, whoa.
Yeah. The energy's completely changed in music, I still love it. There's still some great music about now that's still really inspires me to want to carry on doing this.
What kind of a genre would you say? Still into trance, or is it more?
No, not into trance so much anymore. But there's just some great, this new disco scene and the edit scene's been great.
Always the way.
Put the dog down. But house music, I feel like it's gone full circle. It's a real good dubby house sound that's come back round again. I used to love, like, back in 2000 time, where Yusuf had this great sound and that he kind of brought to life. And I feel like it's come round again.
Is that like the raw, like almost like back to basics?
Yeah, back to basics.
Pianos, like, rearing its head as well, isn't
it?
Like,
definitely, definitely. It's made a huge
comeback. Like a 90s almost. It's got to the 90s kind of stage.
I
always remember one time I went to Groover and said, I just want the piano. So he played it, everything. I'm very, like, if I like a track, I like it. For, like, 3 seconds, if I don't. And he played everything and he just went, I've got nothing in for you now, mate. I was like,
But I want one. Like you, I've just got the train.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go home and spend the afternoon now.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it'd be good.
So, I know you've not done, or you have done not so, some not so glamorous stuff in the past as well. Take different jobs and stuff like that. Do you want to?
Yeah. Oh dear me, I've done some terrible jobs. Where do we start? From shoveling chicken muck for my brother. My brother's a chicken farmer, and I'd always find myself on the farm, you know, doing all the dirty work that he didn't want to do.
Yeah.
Because it's taken a very long time to go from that lad out of the paper round building his record collections, trying to make it as a DJ, to actually turn it into a profitable income. It's taken a very, very long time, really.
Yeah.
So yeah, these jobs are all part of you know, trying to make it, trying to be the person that you want to be.
Yeah.
So yeah, it didn't really bother me doing these jobs, and it still doesn't. There's still times now where I come back after the summer, and there's times where I've still got to, you know, jump on the granite or jump on the farm or do whatnot, and it doesn't really bother me. There's an end in sight. If you still got that vision of who you want to be and where you want to be, there's an end in sight, and it's all helping me become the person.
It's supposed just about having that foundation.
Yeah.
Obviously you need to pay the bills at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And you still obviously work on your plan. You know.
That's it. If you got a plan, you got a vision, you got a dream, then it doesn't matter what you do to make it. You know, if you're trying to be, you're trying to fulfill the best that you can do with your dream, then, you know, being knee deep in chicken muck, it's not going to bother you really, is it? It doesn't bother me.
Indeed.
Doesn't bother me at all, because there's an end in sight, you know.
Yeah. So speaking of plans, then what is the plan?
Well, the plan was, it's funny, like when I very first started getting gigs, I think when I was about 15, 16, I started playing in a youth club and a few gigs in the Chelsea and New Brighton and that, and I knew that things were starting to get the right connections. the plan was, Cream at the time was like the absolute place.
Yeah.
I just thought there was nowhere better. It opened my mind, and I was like, I want to be resident for Cream. That's it. I want to be resident for Cream. Fortunately enough, it's happened. You know, it's happened. It's funny because the very first time I walked into Cream, it was the first proper nightclub I went to. I sneaked in with my fake ID when I was 16, and Sasha
still about 6 foot. Like,
yeah, I was lucky. Yeah, but Sasha was playing, and we went into the main room, and you enter from the back, and you look up towards the DJ booth, and Sasha was there looking like a god. There's like 2,500 people just in the door. I'd never seen anything like it, and I was like, wow, how do you get up there?
Yeah.
How do you be that? How do you, what a thing to achieve, you know? And 4 years ago, I warmed up for Sasha at Cream, you know. It was a real turning point in my career where it's like, I'm doing all right here.
Yeah,
you know?
starting to fall into place.
Yeah, but now it's like, you cannot progress with DJing anymore without making music now. It's I feel like I've got pretty much as far as I can get.
Mm.
I played everywhere I wanted to play, but so the next step is music production and getting some actual music out there.
It's quite surprising, and I think that it's very unique in this day and age now.
Mm.
That's probably just a sign of the times and how accessible
the
internet is and music and, you know, putting something together.
Yeah.
I think it's very unique that you've got to where you even are now
without making music,
you know.
Yeah, it's very, very rare that a DJ breaks through without making music now. In fact, I can't really name anybody, apart from James Abelia and Eddie Halliwell, that have broke
Eddie
through.
Eddie Halliwell, indeed,
without making music. So that's the next step, but that's, you know, I've taught myself to make, I can do that now. So the past 6-7 years, I've had my head down trying to nail this production thing, and I've found a new drive and a new ambition, and that's where I'm at now. Trying to get
self-taught.
Well, but we are lucky. If I get stuck on something, I'm not going to stop. We're lucky. YouTube's there. You type in your problem.
Yeah. So you can learn anything.
Absolutely anything. You type in something as obscure as like the tail on the reverb on the snare is too long, and you type into YouTube, here's a video on how to fix it. Like, it's amazing.
You can be as specific as you want, can't you?
Yeah.
There's really no excuse not to learn and develop in this day and age.
We are living in seriously good times. Yeah. Everything's there. The world is at your fingertips.
It's like I said this morning about doing like hours cardio every morning.
Yeah.
And then I just stick the headphones on and go, okay, scroll through and say, what shall I learn this morning?
Exactly, just, yeah.
You tag a podcast in and go, right, okay, I'm learning this morning.
Yeah.
And away you go. It's almost like just It's the Matrix, isn't it? Just downloaded something. You want it?
Whatever you want, it, yeah, pretty much, yeah.
So you still work out when I be, or yeah. do you still do other stuff while you're not DJing? If you like to,
I'm full time DJing.
You're full time DJing now.
I DJ every day.
But you have done other stuff out there, haven't you?
Yeah, the first 3 years were very difficult indeed out there to make money. Confidence was a big issue for me. Mm-hmm. My first year going to Ibiza, I'd got over there and I'd come from a place where I'd been knocking around with all the DJs. They were brilliant DJs, really, really good. But they were few and far between. There was a handful of us that were trying to make it. And I thought, I'll go over to Ibiza. I've got all this confidence. You know, I'm pretty good at this now. Like, yeah. And I went over and every single lad pretty much was a DJ and was trying to make it over there. And I just never experienced it before. All these confident lads from London and stuff. And I was just like, a bit of a kick in the teeth, really, because I didn't have the confidence to walk into bars and be all cocky. But it's something that I thought, well, I've got to learn to get confident, really. And I entered every competition that I saw. I just thought, I'll let my mixing do the talking, because I'm not so good at it. But over the years, it's confidence is something you can teach yourself, you know. And now I do feel confident walking into a big club and, you know, asking for work or whatnot.
I suppose just getting outside that comfort zone, like what you said there, you weren't confident. You probably had to have, you know, some kind of game plan, and like you say, entering those competitions, it's more exposure as well.
Yeah.
And again, you're just like trying to learn your craft and trying to gauge the crowd at that particular season.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
every season's different over there, isn't it?
Every sound season's wise, different. So. Yeah, definitely.
So have you ever thought about, like, in those 3 years of thinking, like, I shot this, it's too hard?
Well, if my first summer was obviously, I wasn't earning much money. I went over with not a great deal of money. It ran out pretty quick, and I wasn't finding any work. Going into every bar, trying to hand in me demos, and it was getting put on top of a stack of demos that bar's got. And I just realised I had to look for other work. I think I was putting up posters for Dave Pierce for like €70 a week or something stupid like that, and then doing whatever I could to PR work, bar work, just to get by. And the money had run out. Completely ran out. I'd borrowed all I could off me poor mother, and she'd give me all she could give, but there was nothing stopping me going home. I wanted to do this. I had this vision, and I was going hell for leather. Nothing was making me go home. It got to the point where I hadn't actually eaten for 3 days, and I was so hungry, but I'd got the bus down to the end of San An, and I did it every night religiously and walked in and out of every single bar asking for work. And I remember I'd got, and I was sat and I was slumped. I was absolutely starved. And I was watching these drunk lads. They were all having this KFC. And I was looking at them. One of them took a bite out of his chicken, threw it down. There was like 4 pieces left there. And I was just looking at him going, he's just going to walk off. He's going to walk off. And he got the box and he put the box in the bin. And he walked off, and I was like, you know what? This is a low point. But walked over to the one. Walked over to the bin, ate the chicken out of the bin, you know what I mean? But nothing was stopping me. I had this vision, I had this dream and this passion, and it drove me to, you know, eat chicken out of a bin. But it's paid off. It's perfect. Paid off, you know.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, paid off.
Good story, aren't it?
Yeah, that's a really good story, yeah. Have you saved that one up? Did you know you were going to come to the table with this? So, yeah, we've challenging aspects to your career, obviously that's one of them. What,
yeah.
You know, money,
Money, getting paid. I didn't get paid. My second year in Ibiza, after winning the competition, I got a regular DJ slot at a bar that was on the seafront. I got a lot of exposure and got a few more gigs from it. Ended up playing my second summer out there. I was playing 5 nights a week, and I got paid for one. I got paid for one of them, you know, and that was €30. So I was DJing 6 times a week and for €30, you know. But
this is a talking about this the other day. I think when you're going for something like a dream or a goal or something like that, I think why a lot of people give up is they go, okay, I've worked eight. They go to that back to that work mentality, mm-hmm. and go, mm-hmm. Okay, I've worked 8 hours. I should be paid 8 hours.
Yeah.
But I haven't got anything.
Yeah.
I've been doing this for 3 months, 6 months. I haven't earned any money. In fact, I'm actually in debt now. It doesn't work, and then you just walk away.
Well, that's I knew that he was. The more I played, the more exposure I was going to get, the more chances I was going to get. So it didn't matter. Again, I'm back to the chicken muck, you know, in the day doing that or whatever. I'm handing out flyers in the day or whatnot, and it didn't matter. I was, for me, the money didn't matter. I was progressing at what I wanted to do. I wanted to, you know, expose myself as much as I could to get a chance to get a break, you know. So the money thing didn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
The 30 euros I was getting, I was like, yes, I'm getting paid to do this. Like, I'm getting closer to what I want to do, you know.
Powerful, that.
It is powerful.
Yeah.
So, from an outside perspective, you now live in this great life, and what's still a struggle for you? What sacrifices are you actually still making now? And what are you having to work through? Anything that's making you think, is this still for me? I know you're kind of on this road to where you want to be, but is there still like doubts there? You're still struggling with anything on a daily basis?
There's still. I look at where I am with my DJing, and I've done well at where I am, but I still feel a million miles away from where I want to be, which I think's a good thing to have in your head. And any dream you've got, you need to know where you want to be, and you want to be the best at what you can do, you know. And I still feel a million miles away, so I know I've still got a load more work to do. Production's where it's at now, and I feel like I'm starting all over again. I've got this new drive and this new ambition, and we'll see where we end up, you know.
I think
eating chicken out of a bin again.
Yeah. I think goals change as well, don't they? So
goals do change, yeah.
I mean, once you hit one, it's like, I think if you go, right, okay, I'm here now, and you sort of go, but you don't do that, that's not...
Yeah, it was a little deflating, actually.
Yeah.
I felt great, and then, you know, when I got the residency for Cream, and, you know, Ushuaia, which is a new big boy in Ibiza, and I'm really lucky, but it's kind of like... Still feeling many miles away,
yeah.
So, when did you consciously actually decide that this was going to be your full-time job, rather than going out and getting your normal 9-to-5 and, you know, just trying to pursue a 40-hour a week and getting something solid in your life? And
was there a
conscious decision? I know we spoke about like these moments of clarity that you've had, and this is what you want to do.
I think that decision was made like that when I was 9 years old.
Yeah.
You know, at some point this is going to be my job.
Yeah.
It was there, it stuck in my head. And, you know, happily enough, if I could talk to that 9-year old kid now, I could high five him and go, well in, mate, we do.
Yeah.
I think that decision was made then, back when I was a kid.
Almost like flicking a switch on.
Yeah.
Saying like,
I'm
tunnel vision.
I feel very lucky because, you know, I've had people that, the people that I know, that they haven't known what they've wanted to do. And
people still don't.
Yeah, people still don't. And they end up being like, living an incredibly interesting life because you try all these different things and all these different dreams and try and get stuck into all these things. And they end up becoming like the most experienced people in life and whatever they want. But I do feel lucky that I had that little switch turned on, and I've gone, right, this is me.
Mm.
Off we go.
Decent. So what are your standout moments? Something where you thought, right, I've nailed it?
Yeah. I started a little party in Ibiza called Disco Bomb, which basically I just wanted to get all my mates together and have a good time, and it just went crazy, absolutely crazy. It was like, I had to move venues because it got too busy.
Mm.
We ended up going to Ibiza Rocks, and we had to move venues because it got too busy. It was great, like, it really was great. And then from that, I got a bit of heat behind me, you know, and I got offered the promoter of Cream at the time. He always leaves one space free for a DJ that's making a bit of noise. And he offered it to me. And I got it there and then, and he asked me to his house the next day and asked me to be resident there. And then it was a good feeling, like, I was like, oh, it's all happening.
Yeah.
It's all happening. Yeah. At this night, that was doing well, but he'd put me on a warm-up slot or whatnot, and as the club's filling up, and I kind of cut my teeth doing that, and I loved it. But there was one point, one of the big DJs, Eddie Halliwell at the time, was huge. He said that he couldn't play after 6 a.m. in the morning, and the club shut at 6:45, and the promoter, Mo, he said to me, do you want to take it? And this is like... Big DJs wouldn't go on after Eddie because he'd absolutely smashed that room.
Yeah, where'd you go from that?
Yeah, he'd stand on the decks with his shoes and socks off, you know, stage diving. There's 2,500 people chanting his name, and DJs are just like, I'm not playing after that. But I just thought, you know what, let's do it. Yeah, let's do it. And it just went perfect. It went perfect. Like, it was really, really good. Yeah, brilliant. You've got to jump on these opportunities, haven't you? Someone says you've got to go, yeah, let's do it.
Of course. Mm. What about that that picture? Because I think I spoke to you about this a while ago. The one in the outdoor cream in
Creamfields, yeah,
where there's a photo of you, and it was it 10, 15,000 people.
I think we worked out it was like 15,000 people, yeah. But that was another opportunity that got handed to me.
Yeah,
I'd been playing in Ibiza in Café Del Mar the night before. I'd had a few drinks or whatnot. The plane was due at 3 o'clock. I think I finished playing at 2 a.m. Went straight to the plane. Couldn't sleep on the plane. We got off at 6 a.m. Went, got some breakfast. Drove to Creamfields, and I think we was about midday-ish, and about 1 hour sleep. And I was walking to the backstage area, still up.
Yeah.
And James Barton kind of clocked me, and he went, "John, come here." Because we need someone to go and jump on that main stage. I hadn't actually been in and seen the main stage or anything. I was like, how long for? It's like 45 minutes. Are you ready? Again, it was like...
What, just totally out the blue?
Totally out the blue, yeah.
So were you meant to play at some point that night? Or
Oh, yeah, I'd been booked to play, but not the main stage.
Oh, right,
no.
Okay, yeah.
So it was another one of those things, like, I'm getting handed an opportunity, yeah. I don't know what the main stage is, I don't know what it looks like, but I've got my USBs in my pockets. How long do I need to prepare? He goes, you need to be on there 20 minutes. I was like, right. Locked myself in the toilet cubicle, got my laptop out, went through a few tunes, put a fold together, came out, and there was a golf cart waiting for me, got on, got tucked round the back, walked up, and it was greeted with 15,000 people looking at me going, who's this? But I think it's fair to say I pulled it out of the bag. It was brilliant, absolutely mind-blowing. Felt like Freddie Mercury for 45 minutes.
So what was going through your mind? Did you ever go like, oh, shit, I don't want to do this?
Not at one point. I just thought, here's an opportunity.
Yeah.
Let's just go and have some fun. It was brilliant.
How long was you set for?
45 minutes.
45 minutes. Do you know what you played?
I think I can pretty much remember what I played, yeah.
Yeah.
It was just... I looked at them and there's 15,000 people. You can't be clever. It's just like bang out, big tunes, keep them happy. It was quite an easy gig, to be honest. Yeah. Because there's so much energy there.
Yeah, I suppose they're all like receptive. They've all been worked into it.
Yeah, it was great. Kind of,
what did you do? Like drop like just big classics or?
Big tunes at the time, big tunes of the summer, and a few classics towards the end. And it was great. Good fun. And same again last year.
Yeah.
Warmed up for EZ, 15,000 people. Because they did such a good job, they were like, let's do it again, go on, off you go. So now I am booked for like main stages, which is,
styling.
Yeah, very lucky.
You done the North stage, was it, last year?
Yeah.
Creamfields?
Yeah.
How many people was that?
15,000, yeah.
It's not styling.
Yeah, it's mental. Deadly. It's absolutely Deadly. Mental. But to be honest, I prefer small, sweaty.
Yeah.
The atmosphere, rooms. Low roofs,
upstairs
and the atmosphere.
At Sankey's.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff.
So you've done a lot of charity stuff over the last couple of years, haven't you? Can you talk to us a bit about that?
Yeah, I've just been kind of inspired by a few people over the past few years, and I was like, why aren't I doing anything? You know, I'm lucky enough now to. For me to put on a party like back home, it's quite easy for me to fill it because I've done quite well in Ibiza or whatnot. And I thought, well, why not give something back? I'm put in a position where I can do it. Why not? Mm. I've got a very inspiring friend up in Scotland who's disabled, and he talks through a device and stuff. And he goes to HIIT 3 times a week, you know, in his wheelchair and works out. And he teaches other disabled people how to use a speaking device. And I just thought, what an amazing guy. Like, he's doing the best at what he can do with what he's been given.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, well, why shouldn't I be doing that as well? You know, I'm an able-bodied person, and ride my bike to IB for them. I can do it. So off you go, and raises a bit of money. And now it's kind of, it's turned into a bit of an addictive thing now as well. Like, you get a buzz from it, which is, it's not a bad thing, you know.
So where did that idea come from? It was just like... okay, experiment thing, let's just cycle to Ibiza.
Yeah.
Was it
much.
Just...
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I just thought, like, I'll give myself 2 weeks to do it, and all I've got to do in my day is get off and ride my bike. So,
that's pretty much it, yeah.
Which is pretty much it. That's all I've got to do with my day. And, like, that's it. Really.
So, just tell us, like, there's someone who's on the TV and there's someone in it. Just tell us who went with you and what you took.
Nobody came with me. And I took a tent.
And a punch repair kit?
Yeah, a couple of punch repair kits. And I had two panniers either side, which were full with, like, clothes, and I think I had my laptop with me and blankets and stuff like that, and I didn't put that into account. And when I first got off the ferry in France, I started riding my bike. The bike was nearly doing a wheelie because it was that heavy on the back. You know, I was like, oh dear.
Must downsize.
Yep.
So tell us that one about your. I think you were in France somewhere, and it was dark, and you pulled over, and then you were listening to frogs all night.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was that. You're pretty tired at the end of the day. I think that was like day five. And I pitched the tent in this lovely little park. It was dead nice. And there was these French kids there. They were cooking hot dogs and they smelled amazing. And I went over and I was like, here's €2. Going to buy a hot dog. Hot dog. I was just having the best time ever. The sun was
going
setting.
Going back to the KFC thing in a bit.
Yeah. The sun was setting. It was dead nice. Put the tent up by a pond. And I was like, oh, it's great this. And got my head down in the tent. And then as soon as the sun went down, these frogs started. And there must have been about 100 frogs in this pond, and he did not shut up until 7 o'clock. So I just didn't have the energy to take the tent down and go ride up the road. I just had to have a sleepless night.
That's great. So what did you learn anything along the way, like, about yourself? Bit like cheesy, like, but did you anything like...
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'd advise anyone to go through a physical challenge like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned a lot about myself. To be humble in, like... You know, a piece of bread makes you dead happy when you're doing stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
It's, you know, and I'm there, and maybe I get a little big with me boots now because I'm lucky I can get into clubs for free in Ibiza and get handed free drinks and that. And maybe I'm taking a bit for granted. Like, it's an absolute privilege to be handed a free beer in a nightclub and stuff. Maybe I was getting a bit, you know. So it humbled me a bit. Yeah. It humbled me to where I've got and where I am, and also what I'm capable of. You know, a lot of people thought I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Going back to that, your mate in the wheelchair does hit.
It's
something we were talking about on the way here, wasn't it?
And I
said to Sean, I always seem to see someone out and about who's a little bit less able than me. I don't know if I'm looking out for it, or it's just something at the back of my head that I think, you know, there's worse people off than you. And we seen, like, must have been in his 80s, absolutely smashing it down the road, wasn't he?
Brilliant.
I was
absolutely
like, oh, I always see stuff like that. So it's like, having that in the back of your head, I suppose it's always good to have, you know, that there's people less fortunate about.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone gets these thoughts where they're like, oh, I can't be bothered. And then you as you say, we've just seen some 80-year-old absolutely legging it down the road. Yeah, it inspires you.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Yeah.
So you just talking about being humble there.
Mm?
Is there any, like, values or, like, standards you live your life by and or always...
I think I've kind of learned this over the past few years is to just be humble and don't be a knob.
Don't be a knob,
and be useful, be of use, have a look. Yeah,
that's the quote for the podcast.
Just have a look at what you've got, where you are, where you come from, and what you can achieve of that, and do it to the best.
Definitely.
You know, I've got a pair of legs. I've got. I'm an able-bodied person, and you know, do what you can with it.
Yeah. Because you know. I think there is a lot of, like, egos and even, like, society telling people to be a certain way and stuff like that, and and there is a lot of knobs about it.
There is.
Then,
yeah.
I was like, especially if. In every industry, you'd get it, you know, like Charlie Big Spud saying, "I'm the best," da 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 da, and it's like, you're a knob.
It's very easy to come like that. When like, for me, DJing is just another job that I've managed to craft and get good at. But to me, it's no different to being a plasterer or something like that. If I was chatting to a plasterer and I looked at his work and his work's absolutely brilliant, he's done no different to what I've done.
He's just got to the top of his game.
He's doing the best at what he's picked something and he's done it to the best of his ability, and that's what it's about, I think, really.
So what's your, well, I know my definition of success would be different to yours, but what, you know, everybody's is different. What's yours?
Yeah, I suppose when I was younger, I thought success was like fame and power and money and.
Yeah.
But as I got older, I don't think it is. I just think it's a personal fulfillment of what you can achieve,
and being
good at what you can do and giving. You know, I think that's successful. Like for a depressed person, I think getting out of bed in the morning and making breakfast, that's a success. Like that, they really achieved something that day. Whereas, you know, for Richard Branson, it's a bit different. You know, making his breakfast ain't much of an achievement, but he's doing the best at what he can do for his personal fulfillment. Whereas, you know, that depressed person, they're doing the best what they can do for their own fulfillment. And I think your own personal fulfillment, what makes you happy, is success in my eyes, I think.
For me, it's getting to a stage, well, I'm starting to get to a stage in my life now. I've done quite a lot of things. I'm getting married. Got a little lad upstairs. Fantastic. You know, it's not perfect, but I'm still at that stage now where I've got a decent job. But again, me and Mike have kind of like hit a point in our lives where we're like, there's got to be something else. And this kind of what we're doing now with the podcast, and it's that kind of, we're trying to get like a sense of community back for people, because I think people are becoming detached from what real life is and social media, and it's just that everyone's becoming almost separate. Social media is like at the kind of opposite effect of what it was trying to achieve, I suppose. If you let it. So I think that for me, it's about being at a stage where you're quite comfy in your own skin, and you think you can help other people, even if you're not one person. You know, you've won. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
definitely. You're right.
Yeah, mine's similar. I mean, mine goes similar to yours, where. Once you hit something that you've sort of set out, I think the mindset, you go, well, what's next?
Yeah, definitely.
Even before you've actually hit it, sometimes as you get close, you're going, well, I can see that. I can actually touch it, reach out and touch it, and feel it. What am I going to do after this?
Yeah.
And it's that constant thing.
That constant drive to achieve all you can do. And, you know, when you get up to, whether you believe or not, the pearly gates, and St. Peter's, like, well, what did you get up to down there? What did you do? You should be, I think, personal fulfillment to say, I give it my best shot, like, whatever it is, you know, whatever it is, whether you're a disabled person or.
Yeah,
you
know. Well, I think on that is like, did the best I got, and I brought a lot of people with me, I think.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And I think if you're there, and all you said, well, I've made £2 million, it's like, well, that doesn't mean anything.
What do you do with it?
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be nice to have £2 million.
Sean, if you want to, have you got any social media or websites or anything like that you want to add to this? It'll become a bit of
plugging time.
Plug-in time.
I'm not on SoundCloud anymore. I got tucked down. But if you want any of my mixes, that's on here. this.at/thisisseanhughes. Social media is Facebook/DJ Sean Hughes, and Bleep Me, which has got all my social medias and mixes there. That is bleepme.com/Sean Hughes.
Beautiful.
We'll put them on the notes as well.
Yeah, we'll put them on the show notes. And, if you want to hear anything more from Your Business Monster, it's Your Business Monster on pretty much every social platform now: Instagram, Facebook, Medium, iTunes, and of course, yourbusinessmonster.com.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to wrap up soon, mate. But what are you doing this year?
I'm back at Ushuaia, I'm back at Cream, and a few other bits and bobs as well. I'm off to Thailand for a little tour there in April, and heads down with production. Really, this is me next. This is the next thing. Let's
grafting.
Yeah, grafting with that. Let's see where we end up. Checking out the bin.
So yeah, leading us on to what steps can you advise for someone wanting to pursue a dream and turn it into a career? What steps do you think? Are there any kind of like regimented things that they should do?
I think it's just the drive within, and to be sure about what you want to do. If you've got those two things, and keep going, there's no stopping you, really.
Nothing else matters.
You've got those two ingredients, then go for it. Just don't stop, don't give up, don't let negative thoughts bring you down, just keep going, you know.
Yeah. Well, I suppose they've got to be powerful as well, because, like you said about scraping chicken poo off the floor.
Yeah.
If your goal isn't powerful enough.
Exactly, yeah.
You're going to give up then, aren't you?
Yeah, you're going to give up. Just keep going, yeah. The only way is forwards, isn't it? If you keep progressing, where else are you going to end up?
Yeah, yeah. So do you read or listen to anything or that keeps you focused? Is anything like that?
I need to do more of that, really. I can see myself losing track every now and then. So, I'll be listening to your podcasts.
Is there any influences, say the that you follow or...
My cousin Steve's very inspiring, but yeah. Gerald, my friend in Scotland's very just inspiring people that you know you can see that they're cracking on and nothing stopping them. I always take a liking to them. You need to surround yourself with people like them as well. That's a good bit of advice, really.
Yeah. So I find like little bits of what people are doing, probably a positive of social media, is like just seeing the good things people are doing. Yeah. Because sometimes you turn on Facebook in the morning. And everyone's going, oh, it's Monday, oh, I've had the worst day ever. It's just like, what are you moaning about? You know what I mean? You've got a house, you've got a roof over your head, you've just had a meal, you've got, you know.
These are people with no dreams, Mike.
Yeah, exactly. But then there's the positive side of it where people put up like, the charity stuff you've done, and there's a few other people doing charity stuff, and like, you know, there's people on there talking about the businesses and stuff like that, really good stuff that they've done. And it is like really inspiring. I find it really inspiring.
It is. It's good. Surround yourself with that. Yeah. Turn off the negative people on Facebook if you're on it all the time, and surround yourself with the positive people.
Cool.
Helps.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Is that all wrapped up there?
That's a wrap. Yeah. Thank you very much, Sean.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Thanks a million. Yeah.